morning.
No, I'm teaching this class. This is really...
Okay. You forgot to erase the blackboard. That's why you came back. Okay, class. Now, we're going to pass a roll sheet momentarily, but I have figured out a way that will help me to do my roll book. So what I'm going to do is go through the alphabet. I do know the alphabet. I worked on it all during vacation. And when I say, how many people with the last name that begins with A, well, then you'll raise your hand and I'll count those and I'll put down, say, four A's. Okay. Then when this comes to you, then you sign in the appropriate place. And you can just use that as, you know, you don't have to write your, if I put an A, then you can just put, if your name is Anderson, just like that. Now, are there any questions? And then you can put your first name. I would prefer when you put down your first name, you put it down the way that you would want someone to address you. You know, if your name is Frederick, you know, legally, most people don't want to be called Frederick. So, you know, you put down Freddie or... whatever, you know, or some people named Frederick, they want people to call him Bill. So it's, you want that. Okay. All right. How many people have the last name starting with letter A? One, two. Now, one student in my last class, I got down to the L's, and she said, have you got to the C's yet? Poor girl. Poor girl. She dropped out of Bible college already this morning. Okay, B. One, two, three, four, five, six. Okay. This just took me hours of figuring to do this. I'm sure you all agree that it's just brilliant, just brilliant. C's. Oh, one, two, three, four, five. Okay, the B's, so far you're in the lead. Was that four or five? Did I say five?
Five.
Thank you. Thank you. Just seeing if you're awake. Letter D. One letter D, okay. E. One, two. Oh, yes, George, you just woke up. That's so good. Took him a while. I saw him thinking back there. That E, let me think now. Forgot how he spelled his last name. Okay, F. One F, okay. G. Two G's. Now, this isn't boring class. I'll just be relaxed. H. One, two, three, four. One, two, three. Eyes. The eyes have it. I, J. Took me a while. J, K. You want me to put it down with the Hawkins and the H's? That's real good, Brenda. Okay. Let's see, we just got... What did I tell you? There's people like that. Every class. We'll go through it one more time. Okay, H-I-J. Did we get anybody for J? Somebody for J. K. Right, one, two, three, four. Okay. L. One, two, three, four. Okay. The M's will be on the back side in case you're having any trouble with that. M. Isn't that strange? All those. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11, 12. That's really a good representation by the M's. Five, six, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 2, 4, 6, N. One N back there, yes. Yeah. She was almost embarrassed to raise her hand after that. N-O. People with N-O, huh? That's very interesting. O. 1, 2, 3. P. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Q. One Q. That's it's a big letter usually. Q R. One, two, three. S. One, two, three, four, five, six. T. One, two, three. U. V. And yours is over here. W. One W. A lot of people with X usually. A lot of people with X. Y. A lot of people with Y. How about Z? Okay. For you two lovely ladies who just came in, when you sign the roll sheet, sign at the very end, okay? Don't steal somebody's place already on here. Okay.
This is a real good row here. One, two, and then 14 blank seats.
It'll get down there to you in about a week. About a week it'll get there. Okay, now this is Methods by Research. You look pretty familiar. Look like a pretty familiar class. We're going to just start with making a report. That's what we're going to start with. And you are all required to purchase, if you have not already done so, this handy-dandy booklet, Preparing the Research Paper, written by Lorraine F. Dangle and Alice M. Hossman. And that's exactly what it is. So Preparing the Research Paper, it's available on the book counter. And I think that's probably the best place to get it. They used to keep some in the office, but I don't think they do. Probably one of the best things about the book is the appendix that we took time to put in concerning how to do footnotes and bibliography for Bible reference works, like for commentaries, Bible dictionaries, Greek or Hebrew word studies, for a pamphlet, for an unpublished research paper, for a sermon. There's quite a few things that are covered that are a little bit difficult to know what to do with from just the bibliography and footnote information on regular research information books. Okay, so you're required to have that by next week. Okay? All right, now the main thing that we're wanting to do here is take enough time, and it won't be the, we'll take quite a bit more time than most of you have been through the orientation where we go through this in about an hour, but it'll probably take us between 3 and 4 hours, and then you'll have a test on it after we're done. So you will be tested on this material about report making. The main concern is that if you do research, you must be able to communicate it to somebody else. And here, of course, we're concerned in the communication of it in a written form. That's our concern. This is the kind of a study where you can also emphasize the importance of taking the English classes and the writing lab and whatever else is available to improve on your writing techniques. The main thing to writing, though, is taking your time to make sure that you say what you really want to say and so that it comes across clearly. That's the main concern. Most people just don't take the time to do it. If you look at real good tracts that have been written and real good articles, theological articles, they're very, very powerful and they're very, very effective. And some of you might be used in some of those areas. But right now, if you look at what your skills are today, you might assume, well, I could never do such a thing. And that might be true with the skills that you have right now. But if you will apply yourself in the areas that, let's say, begin to draw upon your heart that you have a desire to improve in, you might find that you have, let's say, tremendous ability in some of these areas. It's just so important that you don't look at what somebody else is doing as far as how they're preparing for the ministry, and then you assume that you have to be doing the same thing. Some of you might be drawn into areas that hardly anybody else will be drawn into, but they're just as important as any other area. So you need to be allowing God to draw upon your own heart into the areas that He is wanting to draw you into. And that's very, very important. Now, the thing that I want to give you is a list of the basic skills that are necessary. And these skills take time to actually develop. But the thing about each one of the skills is that really almost every single person can develop the skills to at least one degree or another. They're not the kind of skills that only a genius or somebody that's extremely intelligent could develop. They're skills that almost any single person can develop if they'll just set themselves to doing that. They're skills that take time and experience to develop, and most every person can follow those steps in developing these particular skills. The first skill is using the library. Learning what's there and how to use the references, how not to use them, what to expect from them, kind of safeguards that are necessary when you use reference works. And that's what we took a lot of time to discuss during the first semester. So it's using the library. The second skill is how to take notes. And I think many people have a wrong idea of what note-taking is. Probably one of the key aspects of note-taking is how to read. How to read things and properly evaluate what you have read. Taking the time to not make assumptions as to what you have read, but make sure that you read it and understand it for what it has actually said and then put down those key points. Note-taking isn't copying pages and pages of material. It's reading probably a lot of material and then putting down succinctly and to the point the main things that they have said, the things that will really, let's say, contribute to the paper that you're working on. So a very important part of note-taking is reading and not making assumptions as you're reading. The third skill that's very important is how to be organized, and along with that would be how to make outlines. If you can do good outlines, well, then usually you're a fairly well-organized person. The point here is that in every paper, there must be organization. And as far as putting outlining down with that, a good outline is one that builds step by step, where every single point connects with the next point, and then that point connects with the following one, and it all meshes together. It all makes sense. It builds towards something. Sitting down and writing a letter, writing a small paper, writing a term paper, you need to determine where you're going and what it is you're really trying to accomplish and make sure that you build toward that. So it takes organization. It takes knowing how to make a good outline, how to connect the points together. A fourth skill is how to write a paragraph. Suppose I've mentioned this to you at one time or another, but some people start with page one, indent five spaces, and write for nine pages, and that's their paragraph. It's a nine-page paragraph. That isn't quite the way to do a paragraph. A paragraph is a main thought. It captures a main point, and then that paragraph is to be connected to the next main thought. There's a connection. There's a transition between each paragraph, and they're all building toward to the main point of your paper, to the goal that you've set out to accomplish in your paper. So paragraphs are very, very important. Some people have no idea what a paragraph is. Well, there are certain things that you can buy as far as reading about how to be better with English language, and there's also the basic classes that are offered here in Bible College. A fifth skill is how to do footnotes. Footnoting is not just quoting 5 or 10 sources in a paper so that it looks like you really know what you're doing, but it's putting in your paper key quotes, things that will really add to your paper, and then being able to give that particular person that you've quoted from credit for his information that you have used. Footnotes can also be used to clarify points. Maybe there's something that you've put in your paper and you just don't feel like You want to take the time to clarify that right in the paper itself. You feel that it might detract from the paper, and so you make a footnote, and you put that information in a footnote so that the reader can look at it on his own, but it doesn't really detract from the flow of the paper. You'll find that in many reference works. Many times they'll do it in that way. A sixth skill is writing a bibliography, how to put a bibliography together, using the proper references and then giving credit for those references. So it's compiling and writing a bibliography. The seventh skill is writing a correct, clear, smooth sentence. Many people can barely speak in a correct, clear, smooth sentence, let alone write one. You find that there is a tremendous amount of parallel between the way that people speak and the way that people write. Now, when I say that, in some cases it might take you a while to get a person to say what's really there in their heart or in their mind, but once you get them going, then you can find out whether the person, let's say, is articulate, they can really express themselves, or whether they can't. Normally, you'll find that the person that can express themselves fairly well verbally can express themselves fairly well in a written form as well. That won't always be the case. The problem with our society today is that most people do not know how to express themselves. They do not know how to express themselves verbally, and they do not know how to express themselves in a written form either. They just do not know how to do it. And that's because our society is filled with all kinds of foolish and ridiculous cliches that mean absolutely nothing. They mean nothing at all. And people speak with those terms all the time. That's the only way that they communicate. But there's no communication, you know? One example. The eighth skill is a proper attitude. Realizing that what you're doing is important, realizing that you're not wasting time, and realizing that getting, let's say, more proficient at it will allow you to be better prepared for various ministries. It will allow you to be better able to communicate, to be better able to explain things to people that you come in contact with. A proper attitude is a very important thing in everything that we do. A proper attitude is not such an easy thing to have. Most people fancy that they have a real good attitude, but when it comes right down to it, there aren't that many people that really do have a good attitude. Most people, to one degree or another, are quite negative. We are a very pessimistic society, not too optimistic. Then the ninth skill is the proper use of time. And this is probably the most difficult skill of all, because we all belong to the procrastinators of America. We'll put off anything that we can put off. That means we'll put off putting, we'll put off, let's say, insurance on the home until it burns down, until they rob us of everything we have. Then we'll get theft insurance. We'll put off car insurance until we've smashed up a 1978 Lincoln Continental and it's going to cost us $48 million to replace it. You know, that's the way we are, generally. We do not have much foresight. We don't look very far into the future. We look very carefully at what we're doing right now, and we look quite a bit at the past, and that's about it. That's about as far as we go, generally speaking. Now, the next thing that we want to give you are the basic steps of a paper. And these steps are very important. And I'll take quite a bit of time to really explain the steps to you, so that you might be able to take of these steps things that would help you in doing a research paper. The very first thing is determining the topic. And I would imagine that most people feel that that is the easiest of all the steps. I am afraid that that is one of the most difficult steps. To determine a proper topic is very, very difficult. You have to take the teacher's guidelines, which sometimes most people ignore, seem to push those aside, and off they go without any guidelines whatsoever. You also need to do some reading and research in finding a proper topic. And the thing about it is that you need to make sure that it is something that you can handle. Most people, when they think of topics, they're in the seventh heaven. They're thinking about things that they have no ability whatsoever to research. They don't have the skill to deal with that particular topic. People think, well, I want to do the 70 weeks of Daniel. I want to do Jacob's trouble. They usually think of all kinds of prophetical type topics that they want to deal with. But scholar after scholar after scholar has been stumped by those things for year after year after year, and you come along thinking that you can solve it. Well, you might be able to, depending on your skill, but that's where you have to be very, very honest with yourself. Be honest with your ability. Look at what's available and then take that which you know that you can handle, that which you can really deal with, that which you can study, that which you can research. Not what your friend is researching, not what you wished you could research, but what you know that you're capable of doing. And another thing with the topic is that you must learn how to limit the topic. And that is easier said than done. Most every single person at one time or another has done a report where it was out of hand before they could do anything about it. Then when it came to actually writing it, there was virtually no way to write it. It just went on page after page after page after page, and there was really no rhyme, no reason, or purpose to the paper. It was like they were trapped by some sort of a monster, and there was nothing they could do about it. The problem was they didn't know how to limit the topic. They just looked at it as such a marvelous study, and off they went. And it really covered about 50 different things. And now they try to do all 50 things. Now, when a teacher says, I want you to do a paper 8 to 12 pages, a lot of people have the feeling that's as large as any novel that's ever been written. But 8 to 12 pages is hardly anything. You can just talk about nothing for 8 to 12 pages. You don't have to really get to any main point whatsoever. A lot of people can write introductions that are that long without ever even getting to the topic. So it isn't very much to write 8 to 12 pages. So you need to realize that in order to do something that is really effective, covering just 8 to 12 pages, you're going to have to narrow the topic right down to probably just one main point or two main points and just deal with that so that you can have an introduction, the main study, and a conclusion to it. It's very important that you learn how to limit it. If I said, I want you to do a study on a character in the Bible, most people, oh, I'd love to do David, I'd love to do Paul, I'd love to do Peter, I'd love to do Elijah. And they just start studying David. And they read everything they can find about David, and they take notes, and they have a pile of notes that goes from the floor to the top of the ceiling, and back down to the floor again, and back to the... And they have notes upon notes upon notes covering everything that David ever did. How could you ever write a paper with all that kind of notes without any real direction to what you were really studying about David? You have to look at the life of David and determine, let's say, one or two main things that you really want to study about the life of David. And it would be very, very narrow if it was only going to be a paper 8 to 12 pages. But you must learn to do that. It's very, very important. Many, many times, people have been given assignments and they had a good attitude toward the assignment. They were using their time properly, but because they didn't know how to handle the subject, after a fairly short period of time, they got discouraged with it. They put it aside, thought they'd come back to it later. Every time they came back to it, they were just as discouraged as when they left it, so they never handed in a paper. But see, everything was right, except they didn't really know how to limit the topic to something that they could handle. And if they would have limited it, they would have been successful, and they would have handed in a very good paper because they had the time, they had the heart, they had the ability to do it. But they didn't know how to limit the topic. It's very, very important to learn how to do that. Like I said, it's something that's easy to talk about, but it's not so easy to do. Well, let's say that you've done it. You've determined your topic, and that's step number one. Step number two, you now take your subject to the library. And it might be the first date for some of you in Bible college, but better late than never. And you list on paper the books that you can find in the library that will potentially help you in doing your study. And these books of potential value are now known as your working bibliography. The working bibliography will not necessarily be your actual bibliography, but it's all the books that you know of that you could potentially use. And it might be a list of 10, 15, 20, 25 books. See, what you're doing is you're gaining a real good grasp of your study. You have it limited, and now you're going to the library to find what books are there that can be helpful. And you might be there for 3 or 4 hours, going through the indexes of various books, looking carefully, thinking of other, let's say, synonyms that this topic might be under, and considering all kinds of things, looking in dictionaries, encyclopedias. If your subject connects with, let's say, a number of main scriptures, you would probably be going through all the commentaries on those main scriptures, seeing if with those main scriptures they have dealt with your study. And then you're listing the page numbers, the title of the book, and see, you're gaining a real good grasp on your study. You're getting somewhere. Once you have the topic determined, you've succeeded at step number one. Once you go to the library and you know what's there, what's available, then you've succeeded at step number two. You're getting something done. But what do most people do? They just, okay, report. Okay, what do I do now? Well, I've got 4 months to do it. I'm not going to worry about it for 2 more months. You know, what kind of, this teacher thinks I'm a fool that I'm going to start tomorrow? I'm no fool. I'm going to start 2 months from now. 2 months pass, and there you are. Okay, report. 2 months left. That's a lot of time. And let another month go by. That teacher thought he was going to fool me. No, siree, I'm one up on him. Month goes by. Now you have 1 month left. Report. Now you really don't know what to do, because there's still plenty of time to procrastinate with, but you're kind of afraid that there might be a few finals and other things that might be given you in this last month, so it's time to get started. But you still don't have the topic determined. And you might go through a lot of frustration trying to determine the topic. You might sit down for 3 hours trying to figure out the topic and can't come up with one. So what do you do now? I guarantee you're going to put that report away for at least another week. I guarantee it, because of the frustration. The same thing is probably going to happen the next time that you get it out 1 week later. See, you're defeating yourself all the way along the line. Once a report is given, you should try to determine the topic within the first week of when it was assigned, so that you have that, so that when you're just, maybe you're in the library and you have a free hour and you, well, I've got time, and you take some time and go through the books. And then you have another free hour the next day and you do the same thing, you make a list of books. You have the first two steps done, let's say in the first 2 weeks, and you really haven't had to do hardly anything. But the people that put it off are always putting themselves in a dangerous position. And you can only put things off for so long. And if that's the habits that you begin to set for your life in areas like this, well, it's pretty obvious that they've already taken a good foothold in other areas of your life. And if they've done that, well, you can become a procrastinator in everything, in every last area of life. That's not a very good thing. Not a very safe thing. Okay, the third step, which in my opinion is one of the most important steps, very seldom, if ever done, is writing a preliminary outline. And I would say that there's been one half of one quarter of one eighth of 1/50% of all people in the whole world that have ever considered really doing such a thing. The preliminary outline, once it's done, and I'll give you an example of what it is, it will serve as a guideline by which you can organize all of your research. And if your research is not organized, your paper will not be very good. I don't care if it's in on time, I don't care how nice it's typed, it's not going to be very good. Good papers must be organized. They must build step by step by step, covering the important areas. They must do that, or else they're really not of any value. Some people think, my paper was good because I got an A. Well, you're assuming that the teacher had time, which he doesn't always have, to read every single paper, every word, Most teachers don't have that kind of time. You might get an assignment back and, oh, it looks like I did real good. But you may not have done as well, really, as what the grade indicates. Don't assume that the grade necessarily indicates how well you're doing. Many people get good grades in Bible college, and they're not doing very well in Bible college. Because Bible college is no real challenge to them. They're very, very smart. These things come easily. And here they are with a 3.6, 3.7. They think, oh, I'm doing real well in Bible college. They're not doing very well at all. They're doing very, very poorly. The grade point means very little as far as your real success, let's say, in Bible college, as far as what God is really being able to do in and through your life. Grades, they can be a pretty good thermometer at some times, but they're not as good as what some people wish they were. Other people are glad to find out that they're not so good. Kind of depends on what category you're in, I suppose. Now, in order to come up with this preliminary outline, you are going to have to do some reading. You're going to have to read things concerning your topic. And once you have come up with this outline, not only is it going to be the key to the organization of your paper, but it's going to be the key by which you know what to read and what you know to take notes on as you do your research. This is really the guideline for everything you do on your paper. Step number one, you come up with a topic. And let's say in this case that it is on some person in the Word of God. Interesting little persons drawn here. And this blue chalk is, there is chalk down there. Remember, I dropped one there last semester. Okay, let's say you're going to study Joshua. That's the general topic. You must now limit it to the key things of his life that you want to study. And if it's a longer paper, you'll be able to study more detailed aspects of his life. If it's a shorter paper, well, then you're not going to be able to study as many. In order to find out what things are really interesting, you're going to have to read about Joshua. You want to read, say, portions of the book of Joshua. You want to look in Bible dictionaries and Bible encyclopedias. You want to look for areas that are really interesting to you. Maybe certain things that he did. How he, thing that we studied, of course, in Unfolding Ground, how he came to the point of having this name. You might want to study something like that. You might want to look into the background of his life to see how he ever came to the position that he was in. You might want to study that because you're wanting to find the characteristics that are necessary by which God could put you into the ministry. You're wanting to look for things that would be really interesting to you, that you could put your heart into. Many people take reports or research assignments and they just do it academically. But that isn't ever going to be of much value. When you have an assignment that is of somewhat of a general nature and then you have to determine the specifics of it, you need to look for those areas that are really appealing to your heart, those things that would be vital to you, that you would be able to learn for yourself, and then you know that you'd be able to give those things to other people as well. You must do it that way. If you don't do it that way, you're not going to accomplish anything. It's not going to be of any real lasting value. So it's important that you take the time to read and to determine the areas that you really want to study. So you have to do some reading in order to do that. Now, let's say you do decide to study his name, and you feel that the name would also be a part of his background that allowed him to come into his ministry. And you want to connect those two things together, his name and that which brought about him coming to this position in his ministry of being over Israel. And that's the main things that you're wanting to study. Now, with that in mind, you can turn to the to the reference works that are available, and you can be looking for that information so that when you open up every single reference work, you know what you are looking for. Many people go to the library and they just open the book and they really have no idea what they're looking for. If they're just studying Joshua, that's all they look for. They just look up Joshua. Joshua, Joshua, Joshua. In every book, they take down notes, but there's no real reason behind the note-taking. They're not really looking for anything specific. You must be looking for specific things. If you're not, you're going to waste hours and hours and hours of time. That's why people end up not turning in reports, because they don't know really what they're looking for. So they get frustrated and exasperated with it, and they put it aside. You must make sure that you're looking for specific things. I wish I could really get it across to you. I know most of you go like this, but it's kind of through a number of horrible experiences that your ears finally get opened and your heart gets ready to receive what is necessary. In anything you do, if you don't really know what you're looking for, you're not going to get much done. You're going to get very frustrated and very discouraged with it. So it's very important to look for specifics and determine those specifics. Now, with this guide then for reading and note-taking, you can really begin to accomplish something in your research. And it's because it's determining for you the very areas that you are going to research. And when you look in the book and it doesn't have anything, then you can close that book and you should make notation. You should keep a list of the books that you have used so that you don't go back to books that you've already looked at. Make sure that you do that. Make sure you keep a list of the books that you have actually used in your research, whether it had information or not, so that you won't be going back. You go to the library on a Monday and you're not there for another week, and then you come back on a Monday and you do some research on Tuesday as well, and then let's say 2 weeks go by, you go back and look at that wall of commentaries. It is not very easy to remember which books you used and which ones you didn't. And if you're not keeping record, you're going to look through some of the same books over again and find out that they don't have any information, just like you found out the first time. But you're not going to remember that until, let's say, another 15 minutes have been wasted. So keep track of the books that you've looked at. Keep track of whether they were helpful or not. When you put down notes, make sure you always put down the source where it came from, even if you're not quoting from it. That just allows you to know where it came from so that you won't go back to that book again. It also helps when this happens, when you write down something hastily and you can't make heads nor tails of what it is you wrote down. And that does happen. And you read it, and you read it, and you read it, and you wonder what in the world you meant by what you wrote down. Now, if you don't know where you got the idea, then you're going to have to go through all those books again, or else throw those notes away. But probably that was a very important point which would help in your paper, and so to have to throw it away is kind of a discouraging thing. It would have been better to make sure that you put down the source, and even if the material doesn't come exactly from the source, when you're reading many, many times, it will spur many, many other thoughts. So if you put down the source, and then even if it's your own thoughts, what you can do in some cases, if it comes directly or indirectly from that source, then you can just write it down and just number the points, let's say. But if it's something that you think of as you're reading and you want to make sure that you keep that clear that it's your own thought, you might put that in brackets. That might be helpful to do something like that. Many, many different things that you can do. Now, the fourth step is the actual reading and note-taking. And this is based on the preliminary outline. The preliminary outline is the very guide to this. Without having that guide, your reading and note-taking is not going to be very effective. Now, in the reading and note-taking, something that will help, first of all, the working bibliography helps, because that means you've already gone through a number of references and determined that at least potentially these books will be helpful. But another thing that will even be more helpful in time is as you learn which references are more valuable than other references, so that you can always be going to those ones first and then the ones that you have more or less categorized as secondary as far as their value, you can go to those later in your research. Now, some of you have only used the library kind of sporadically, but you already have certain opinions on certain books, and that's good. Now, those opinions most likely will change the more that you use the books. There are some books that you go to, and at first you think they're very, very good. The more that you use the book, you find out that it's not so good. Sometimes it's because now you've learned more, and you can understand better what the fellow is really saying, and you can realize that he doesn't really know what he's talking about. But at first, it seemed real good. Well, that's fine, and it's good, but the only way that you're able to come to those opinions is by using the books. I think it's somewhat of a sad indictment against some people that they constantly are going to books, really, that are of not much value, but that's because they haven't used enough of the books to really know which ones are good and which ones aren't good. You come to pretty quick opinions in using the books. Now, that isn't to say that some of these other books aren't helpful, because in some cases, you might go through every book that you think is valuable, and then you start to go through some of the other ones that you didn't feel were of much value, and lo and behold, those books had the information that you really wanted. And that will happen in many instances. But generally speaking, as you learn which books are, let's say, more valuable, those will help you more often than the other ones. Like Wesleyan's commentary. That isn't a very good commentary. Beacon Bible Commentary. It can be good, but generally it's very shallow, and so it doesn't have that much information, normally speaking. The Biblical Illustrator has tons of information, but usually it's written from a homiletical point like sermons, and so it never really gets down to specific points. So usually that is not of much value. Besides that, it takes an awful long period of time to figure out what the fellow is really saying and what his points really are. Somewhat difficult to use. Now, in the reading and note-taking, you must read carefully, and then you record the key thoughts, the important facts, or the important pieces of data, and you also record any really helpful, let's say, enlightening things that would really contribute quotes. But don't be quoting just to be quoting. Well, I need to have 4 quotes from this one and 3 from this one and 2 from this one. If there's nothing worth quoting, then don't quote from them. Don't quote just to be quoting. I don't think it's a very good idea. If you don't have any footnotes because you couldn't find anything worth quoting, that's fine. But if you find a number of very interesting and powerful and quotes that would really add to your paper, well, then by all means include those and put those in your notes. And when you find material that you're going to quote, make sure that you've followed your little booklet that you're all purchasing so that you put down the right information so that when you do the footnoting, you don't have to go back to the reference work again. That means make sure you put down the page numbers, the actual author, title of the book, publisher, whatever else is needed. Make sure you put that down so that you don't have to go back and look for that later. What you'd really like to do is finish all your reading and note-taking and never have to go back to the library. That's what you'd really like. But most times, people get done with what they think is a reading and note-taking and have to go back constantly to the library to finish their bibliography, to do their footnoting, and to figure out what in the world some of these things are that they supposedly got from some of these books. That's what they have to do, and they're going back to the library over and over again. There's things in life that are frustrating, but that's one thing that can be really frustrating. You get home, and then you have to go right back to the library, and you only have to go there for 5 minutes, and then you go home, oh, no, forgot another thing. Make sure you're putting down those things as you're doing the reading and note-taking. And you will learn, if you make a number of trips back and forth to the library, what things you really need to get down and what things you don't need to get down. When you're doing this note-taking, be fairly neat. Do not invent new abbreviations that nobody could ever decipher. You could put the federal government and all their Secret Service people on it, and they could never decipher what some of the abbreviations are. Kind of like you had a momentary inspiration, but now you've lost the anointing, I suppose. The Spirit of God has lifted, and so you'll never be able to figure that out. You'll have to go back to that book again. Maybe then you'll never be able to figure it out either. And make sure that you categorize your notes as you go. There is no sense whatsoever in just taking notes and then later trying to recategorize them. There's no sense in that whatsoever. The best thing to do, in my opinion, is this. Take the notes. Now, some people want to do it on like 3x5 cards. That's entirely up to you. Other people want to use full sheets of notebook papers, whatever is most convenient for you. But whatever you do, let's say you put it, these are green pieces of paper with blue edges, and they keep growing. They keep getting bigger. Why that is, I don't know, but that seems to be what's happening. Now, let's say your paper, besides the introduction, which every paper should have, an introduction, and a conclusion, every paper should have a conclusion, every single paper you ever write should have an introduction and a conclusion. Let's say the paper has three main areas, three specifics is what you are dealing with in your paper, and you've got it right down to the main point, so you know exactly what you're looking for. When you go to the first reference work, then as you're reading for that, you're looking for three things. You're looking for three main areas. If that reference work doesn't have it, well then on another piece of paper, you're keeping track of those references. And so let's say Barnes Notes has nothing on any of these three points. On this list of paper, you would put Barnes Notes, nothing. You just make sure you have Barnes Notes and then record however you want that he didn't have anything in it of any value as far as what you were looking for. Then you go to the next reference. Let's say it's Ellicott's commentary. And he has information on this point here, in this first one, and he also has information on this third point. And so here you'd put Ellicott, and you'd want to make sure that you have enough information for the bibliography. Now, at this point, there will be differences in some cases. I don't remember exactly what the full differences are, but there are differences between bibliography entries and footnote entries. It's not always the same exact information that you put down. So you want to make sure that at this point you put down enough information so that you can write the bibliography entry when you come to that point in your paper. So you want to make sure that you have that here. And then you put down carefully the points that he has concerning this first area of your paper. Okay, so now you'd be able to look at your notes here and know that from Ellicott he had these things that correspond to this first area of your paper. And then if he had it here. Now, because at this point you're only concerned with bibliography entry, you don't have to make sure you have all the information about a bibliography entry again down here. All you need to have down there is that it's from Ellicott. You don't need to have it in both places, but you do need to have it somewhere, the information from Ellicott, that would be enough for a bibliography entry. Now down here you might only have two things that would go along with this point in your paper. Well, now when you're done with that, you just close it up and put it back on the shelf. Now if he has information that you want to quote, then you need to make sure that you get enough information from him so that you could put that as a footnote entry. So you just want to always make sure of that so that when you're done with the book, you're done with the book. You don't have to go back to it again. Now, when you've gone through, say, 15 references, and out of that, let's say, 8 or 9 have supplied good information, well, your notes are going to be such that you have actually 3 stacks of notes. And they're already categorized to the 3 main areas of your paper. You don't have to go through and recategorize them as to the main points. This is extremely helpful to do something like this. You can use full sheets of paper or growing sheets of paper or 3x5 cards, whatever you feel is best for you. entirely up to you. I don't know how you're going to get it to grow. I don't know how I did either, but that's your problem. But you see, you have it categorized. Another thing that's valuable is to only write on one side of the paper. For one reason that it's good to do that, it's much easier to use your notes to write on only one side of the paper. It's much easier to use them as far as writing your rough draft. Much easier. The second thing that's valuable in doing that is that if you have quoted something here, and let's say it covers half the page, and it's a lengthy quote, if some of you write 2-inch letters, well, it's not a real lengthy quote, but if you write fairly small, then it's fairly lengthy. And when you come to writing your first draft or your rough draft of your paper, and you want to put this quote in your paper, well, if you have writing on both sides of the paper here, well, then you're going to have to just copy this quote again in your rough draft. But if you've written only on only one side of the paper, then it is very easy to take out the household scissors and just cut this right out. Just clip, 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 and then take out the scotch tape it right into the rough draft where you want it. It's very, very easy to do that. And instead of taking 10 or 15 minutes to copy it again, it's only taking you about a minute to cut it out and to scotch tape it in. So it makes it much easier. It's very, very easy to do that. But if it has material on the back, and let's say the material on the back you're not going to be able to use till later in the paper, well, you're going to have to put a note down, let's say at this point in your rough draft, cut out quote from page 3 in my notes, section 1, after I've used the backside in section 4, page 12 of... Very, very difficult to do such a thing. Very difficult to keep track of that. But if you only do it on one side of the piece of paper, then if you have a quote like this, very easy to cut it out and scotch tape it right into the rough draft wherever you want to do that. That way you don't end up copying it 3 times, you only have to copy it twice. And let's say you have 15 quotes, and let's say that takes 5 to 10 minutes to copy each one. You have anywhere between, say, 45 minutes or an hour and a half or whatever that it would take you to copy these the second time. But if it only takes you a minute for each one to cut them out, you've saved 30, 40, 50, an hour in time, which can be a lot of time when it comes down to finishing a paper when it's required. The due date, that is. So those are valuable points. And you can use your own methods of, reevaluating these, doing it in a way that would be, better adapted to your own skills. Now, another thing about having the notes like this, then you can go through these notes and you can begin to number the points. And you can read through the notes. Let's say you have 10 pages of notes for this first section. Now, you're going to have to read through those notes and determine in what order you want to put those notes down in your paper. But see, like this, you can read through it very carefully and you can begin to use, let's say, in pencil. Here you decide, that's the first thing that I'm going to put down. And then down here you might have a 2, and on the fourth page you might have a 4. But see, you're able to, as you read through the notes, and you can put numbers by the points, and that can be the order that you will follow as you transfer it from the notes into your actual rough draft. So you can do something like that. But if you try to do it by just taking notes for all 3 areas, just on paper, just page after page after page, well, then, first of all, you're going to have to recategorize all the notes, and then you're going to have to organize them as to the points by which you're going to follow for that individual section, which is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times more difficult, let alone being 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times as long in doing. So you're trying to follow a method that will allow you to save as much time as possible, but at the same time, help you to be more organized than, let's say, you've ever been before in doing research. Okay. Now, the next point is that the bell rang, and we'll continue with this next week. And how do we do with my roll sheet? Worked perfect, right?
I did notice some laughter over here. I don't know. That'd be what it was in reference to, but I'll just ignore it, I guess. I have witnessed it. That's pretty bad. I forgot that one.